All right, good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, July 11, 2017. We've got another packed agenda, so I'm going to endeavor to keep us on task. Board, as is our tradition, unless there is objection, I'm going to move item number one from additional items, which is a bid opening, up to the very top of our agenda, so that the guys that are here that work for a living can get out of here and go back to work, and then we'll move on through our agenda. Any objection to that?
None.
With that, I'd ask everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, so we'll go right to bid opening. Mike, how are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Morning, Mr. Cox.
Blake is passing around some bid tab sheets.
I'm Luke Monet with Shive Hattery Engineering and a project engineer. And so we are opening up bids for bid package one, the stream restoration for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor project in Ames. And we've received some bids here, and we'll just go down through the list to identify. The first bid is submitted by Crow River Construction from New London, Minnesota. And a bid bond of 5% is included. Bidder status form is included, as well as the non-collusion affidavit. So, the schedule of bid prices, Mike, if you want to read.
And I'm going to read the total base bid. Total base bid for Crow River is $1,077,234.
Second bid received is from Peterson Contractors Incorporated out of Rhinebeck, Iowa. A bid bond in the amount of 5% is included. Bidder status form is included, as well as the non-collusion affidavit. The
total base bid is $810,379.50.
The last bid received was from Construct Incorporated out of Ames, Iowa. bid bond in the amount of 5% is included. The bidder status form is included, as well as the non-collusion affidavit.
And the total base bid is $931,834. $931,834 even.
All right, so first of all, we thank all the bidders for bidding. Mike, walk us through the process from here. I assume that you guys will go back and verify numbers, and then will it go to the conservation board before ultimately it comes back to us with a recommendation?
So, yeah, we'll go review numbers, review responsiveness, et cetera, on bids, come back and bring it in front of the conservation board for next Monday night for their recommendation to the supervisors. And then we'll bring that recommendation forward for next week, so next Tuesday, in order to award the contract.
Super. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Okay, so now back to the agenda. Public comment number one, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. I see Brenda taking one over to... I'll bring it to Shelly in just a minute. And you get to go right to the microphone before you ever sit down.
This isn't on the agenda, so...
You want to wait all the way through, or would you prefer to do it now? We're going to be here, I mean, it's going to be 1:30 before we get to that.
Might
be a little optimistic. Might be a little optimistic. That's exactly right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Luke. Thanks, Ted.
Thank you.
All right, Brenda, start by introducing yourself.
My name is Brenda Brink. I live near Huxley, Surrey County, of course. Been there many years. My comment is about the unsustainability of the CAFO industry in Iowa. I had a call from Jacqueline Schmiel, who lives up near Lincoln Feeders in Northeast Surrey County, and she already sent this letter to the supervisors, so I'm sure you're all aware of it. But what it points out to me is that people don't feel like they really have a way to address the unsustainability. In this case, those of you that don't know anything about this, their property is very about a mile from Lincoln Feeders, and for two and a half weeks, there's a bin full of adult pigs. You're talking adult. How big those are, you know. Adult hogs in this bin for 2.5 weeks. So when she visited with different people, the state veterinarian actually told her that they assumed it was a new pig virus coming around. So Jackie, who was not able to be here today, I don't believe she's here, I told her I would probably try and make it to the meeting, bring this, highlight this. She's concerned about the amount of antibiotics, and this is what is one of the big problems with confinements, is in order to keep those hogs, I mean, they're breathing out of the manure pit. We know how poisonous that is. They're breathing all those vapors out of the manure pit. They're in close proximity to each other. The amount of antibiotics it takes, and I've spoken about this before and I will continue to speak about it, is that there is a public health crisis with antibiotic overuse. And even though the federal government says, okay, you got to start using less antibiotics in the animal feeding industry, that's not happening. That's not happening. So her quote is, this means huge doses of antibiotics will be used and the immune systems of those hogs will be whacked. So there will be other diseases. My concern is where all of this antibiotics bacteria is draining. Is it going into Minerva Creek on our farm and into the Iowa River? I talked to DNR and they may come out and check the drainage. I'm not going to stop talking about this because to me it's the water. And when we're talking about anything that impacts the water, I will be right here, and I am just here to say this, whether it's antibiotics, whether it's contamination with the actual bacteria, This is an unsustainable industry, and we don't need more of it in Iowa.
Absolutely. Brenda, we're so appreciative that you're here and know that you're really consistent with this message. I also know that you know that the Board of Supervisors doesn't have the authority to directly address your concerns. This is an absolute state issue that the county is in the middle of. As far as this specific example, we did, in fact, get this letter from Jacqueline Morris. Was it a week ago?
Mm-hmm.
A week ago. We have since had Margaret James, who does a phenomenal job for us, has been out looking into it. DNR has been up. Our legal counsel has been communicating with DNR's legal counsel, and the realities are that Lincoln Feeders is, in fact, following the law. You don't like the law, I get that. They're following the law. These adult hogs that are there while they're waiting to be picked up from the rendering plant that's taking them. And Lincoln Feeders has been highly communicative of this. They've been in touch with everybody, and DNR and our own Board of Health is on top of it. But really appreciate you bringing it to us. It's a concern that we need to continue to follow, and we need to continue to work at the state level to get things in place that allow those of us in local government to have a little more control. So thank you.
I'd like to...
Sure.
Brenda, I drove out there, excuse me, last Thursday night, just to take a look myself, and I did see that the rendering company had been out there because there were one bin was completely empty and the other one did have some pigs in it still. So I want to let you know, I understand. I just want to let you know that it's not the same pigs that have been sitting out there for 2.5 weeks, that it's our understanding that the rendering company can't come any more often. I'm concerned also. And I want to go out and physically see the situation. So my husband and I drove out there Thursday. The other thing that will probably come before this board in a couple weeks is we've been waiting to hear back, our legal counsel has been waiting to hear back from the Attorney General's office about whether we might be able to look at an ordinance of some items associated with the CAFO. We heard back from the AG's office. I was going to let everybody know during comments today that theoretically we could do something as far as the Iowa Attorney General's office is. So I'm going to bring that before the board, if it's okay with everybody, or ask Margaret to bring it before the board on July. Now, that's on the items that we have control over, okay? It's not over the entire CAFO situation. Margaret's gone next week, so that looks like it would be 2 weeks to get back then the update from our staff. I'm at least glad about the timing a little bit because the Iowa Association of Counties has their annual meeting in August. And so I know that one of the proposals for a legislative priority isn't it Webster County, a supervisor in Webster County, about reexamining the master matrix?
Oh, there's multiple counties right now that have requested that. But, Morris, my suggestion, I wasn't aware you were planning on staff going ahead and work on this. So we talked about letting our county attorney reach out to the attorney general,
right,
get an opinion back, and then offer us advice.
Right.
I believe we got different advice from our county attorney than you suggest we're getting. I think our county attorney said, or a civil attorney said, his advice would be that we not mess with it. So we better have that conversation in a board meeting before we spend any staff time on it.
Oh, absolutely. Let me clarify here. If you remember when we went ahead and had the big the discussion, what we had said is that other staff had done their investigation on their assigned tasks, but we were waiting for the AG's office. And then what we were going to do is just have the staff come back and report. I'm not asking staff to do anything else. Okay, I know I can't do that. That was just to finalize what we initiated this spring. And then, so that's just it. We've never had the report from the various
sure, but I believe that what we suggested, and we'll have to go back and look at the
thing, sure,
is that we start with the county attorney, once they get that opinion, coming back to us in an open session, giving
sure
everybody their opinion of what they discovered before we go any further than that.
That's fine. If okay, that's how you want it to come back on the agenda, that's
sure
fine with me.
Okay.
Okay. Thank
okay
you.
Thanks. Brenda, thank you for speaking. Anybody else wishing to address the board on any topic this morning? Seeing no one, we'll move to discussion and consideration of Optima Life Services' request to suspend monthly lease payments and utility reimbursement. I know we've got Bill Dodds here. Deb Shildroth's been working on this. So this all was triggered for us in Story County when I read an article in the Ames Tribune talking about how Optima, a payment of about $1 million, Bill, and I'd like you to talk to us a little about it, is being delayed from one of the funders, and it's causing real trouble in cash flow sense for Optima. So I went to Deb and I said, Deb, tell me what Optima, we're a landlord for Optima on the three group homes, tell me what Optima is paying us every month for those, and would it be helpful to Optima's cash flow situation if Story County were to take a look at that? From my understanding, from that point on, you've had several conversations with Bill and other staff members, and so I just ask you to take it from there.
All right. Yes, we are a landlord, so to speak, with Optima for the three group homes that are located in Ames. And per our lease agreement, which this is actually kind of timely because we need to look at renewing that for the upcoming year, the lease payment that we receive each month for the three group homes is $14,211. There's a square footage computation that we look at. So that's what we're getting per month in the lease agreement. And then the utilities are still in the county's name for each of those group homes, and so the county pays those, and then facilities bills Optima to get reimbursed for those utilities. And the total owed right now in utilities is $21,041.72. So I apologize. The total amount due for utilities is $6,830.72. So what's owed right now for July lease payment and the utilities is the $21,041.72. So at that point, I'll turn it over to Bill to talk a little bit about what's going on with the managed care organization and the payment for services.
Thanks, Deb. Just to kind of set a backdrop for the situation, since the advent of the new managed care system, we're finding that the average days to payment for our claims have gone from 9 days under the previous system to 25 days under the current system. So for us, that increases our accounts receivable by $1.25 million per month. Just if everything is paid on time per the contract the state has with the MCOs. And I won't belabor why I think that's a bad idea, because that's money that we have to pay interest on and that the MCOs receive interest on. But that's the situation. So I think every provider finds themselves in a very similar situation. And so that puts us at the edge of our normal credit, and obviously we've had to seek more credit. Then it also makes us vulnerable to interruptions in the system of payment, and there have been plenty of interruptions during the 16 months the plan has been running, primarily because two of the three MCOs basically have a commercial claims payment system that they are trying to make work for Medicaid claims, and it doesn't work very well. So we find ourselves every month someplace between 250 and at one point $1.25 million over 60 days just because some other piece of the claim system is broken. Now, fortunately, we were had solved most of that problem in May when we got into a payment dispute with one of the MCOs, and at this point we're about $1.25 million behind their payments. Now, the good news is some of those payments have finally started to trickle in this week, which is a couple of weeks ahead of when we thought we might get that. So we'll see our cash flow recovering pretty substantially over the fall, late summer and fall, but it's going to take us probably till the end of the year to get all of our vendors caught up and get our salary cutbacks restored for our employees. So your offer to consider pending our payments, lease payments, and utility payments for the RCS would be greatly appreciated. I want to make clear, we do want to get you those paid before the end of your fiscal year, but if we could have a three-month suspension of those payments, that would be helpful.
Yeah, and so that's exactly what I'm envisioning, is that we would say for the next 90 days, you know, you're going to owe this money to
right.
the county.
Yep. Oh,
when your cash flow situation starts to work out better where you can catch up, you catch up. My suggestion, board, would be no interest or anything like this. This is just us trying to make sure that services in Story County continue in as uninterrupted a fashion as possible due to the
cash flow. We appreciate that.
Absolutely. So that's what Bill's requesting here as part of this letter. I don't see the 90 days in here anywhere, but I would suggest that we would want to cap this at 90 days unless we revisit it at some point.
Right. That sounds excellent to us.
Board questions?
So this was rolled out last year, the state of Iowa come to the providers and saying, okay, it's a coding issue, and that's an easy fix. We can do this. We can tighten up the payment schedule. A year later, what's the story?
A year later, the story is exactly the same as it was a year ago. Every month, some piece of one of the three MCO system breaks. They particularly, you know, their commercial systems are designed to capture other insurance payments. And the problem is a lot of these Medicaid folks do have some other kind of insurance, but it doesn't cover the services that we are typically providing and getting paid for. We've had lengthy discussions. I know the state has had discussions with our provider association. And supposedly those systems are edited so that they will weed those out and not deny those claims without having to go get a Medicare denial or a Blue Cross denial. But there's no permanent fix. What we really see happening is the claims will start to build up in one of the MCO systems. They'll start a special project. They'll basically pay those claims by hand, and then we'll move on down the road, quite frankly.
Not much of a system.
No, it's not much of a system.
So I assume that you're having conversations with the state of Iowa.
Well, we are. So we've been trying for the first 16 months. You know, I wrote an editorial, an op-ed when this started. I'm not against managed care. I had some fairly high hopes for this program. Obviously, they're not as high as they were. But we're realists. We understand that this Medicaid money doesn't last forever, and, you know, depending on what the federal government does, it may not last very long. But we're more than willing to work with the state and with the MCOs to try to make this a more efficient system. We met with all three MCOs when this program started and said, we have some ideas about how to serve people who have high needs and are therefore high cost to you. How about if we sit down and talk about some of those? They all said, well, we're not ready to do that yet. And, you know, 16 months later, we've not heard from any of them. So from our perspective, what really is happening is what the Register editorial writers and everybody feared, and that was they're managing the cost of high-cost patients and not really doing anything else, which really puts, the counties are still somewhat involved in providing services to people with disabilities, and those high disability level, high cost individuals with serious mental illness, with intellectual disabilities, with brain injuries, and, you know, they're seeing, regardless of the spin, they're seeing those services reduced, the payment for those services reduced, as if that could go on forever, and that's not possible. And part of our disagreement with the MCO that we're talking about is simply because we serve a lot of those people, their claim surveillance notices that. We've disagreed with them about how long some of those individuals need higher levels of payments, and this is where we end up. So we're certainly talking with Medicaid. We're actively working with our attorneys on getting a meeting with a new DHS director. We're going to be reaching out to some key legislators and probably to some key boards of supervisors this fall and just really express our opinion, A, about what's not working for the Medicaid members that we're all trying to serve, and B, what our recommendations would be to improve things. Now, I don't know how much, you know, effect that will have, but our position is we're not going to simply try to manage to get by. We're going to take a shot at trying to improve the system. But in the long run, providers like us that have specialized in providing services to individuals with more significant levels of disabilities are going to end up not providing those services if they don't get paid for them adequately. And that's going to leave a group of people who don't have services. They're going to be homeless. They're going to be in jail. They're going to be in the hospital. And I don't really think that's good public policy, and I don't really think that's what the people of Iowa want. So we're going to work on it, and we'll see where we get. But in the meantime, every penny counts.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bill. Laura, questions?
I don't have any questions. As I was listening to your explanation, and then, of course, I heard the word deny,
I think each of us sit on at least one board that has some kind of similar experience. I really believe we're not the only landlord having a discussion like this with a provider, at least one provider. We only happen to be landlords for one, but I'm sure these discussions are going on in other with other agencies in their
homes. Yeah, I mean, the real problem for us is our hands are really tied when the new state law doesn't allow us to contribute any general fund dollars at all to the provision of services. So we can look at doing something like this because it's not, we're not providing dollars to provision of services, we're providing some leeway as a landlord. So I appreciate the creativity, both Deb and Bill, in coming up with this. I'm going to suggest, Board, that we move to adopt this for a period of 90 days, and we try to help wherever we can, Bill. The most important thing, while I feel for you and your staff and what you've got to go through, the most important thing are the people you're providing services
Absolutely.
To, and let's make sure that we're providing every service that we reasonably can, and we really appreciate you being here in Story County and providing those services.
Thank you. That's good to hear. We enjoy the partnership.
Other questions? If not, I'm sure entertain a motion.
Well, with that said, I would consider a motion for Optum AUI service request to suspend monthly lease payments and utility reimbursement for 90 days, and if it does go over, for a revisit.
I'll second.
You have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Deb, anything to add for us? Okay. For anything else?
No.
Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It's approved for a period of 90 days.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Next item is Ames Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Quarterly Report, Brenda Dreyer. Hi, Brenda.
Good morning.
Hi, Leanne.
Hello. I'm just this morning will actually highlight both Workforce Solutions and also our efforts to assist the communities under 2,000 here in Story County. So I'm going to start first with Workforce. Just to refresh your memories, our Workforce Solutions initiative has a number of parts to it. K-12 engagement with the 7 school districts of Story County, as well as Boone, our summer internship program, Home Base Iowa, counselor assistance program, job posting board. So the support of Story County is really key to this broad-based initiative supporting not just the community of Ames, but all of Story County. In terms of K-12 engagement, the last time I was here, shortly after I started in April, I really announced to you we were to the point we were just rolling out the opportunity for our students in the county to enroll in some really project-based learning. So we've got the enrollments for the coming school year. So on the SCALE program, we have representatives and students from 6 school districts, and we have 55 students enrolled in the SCALE program for the coming school year. Ames is in its second or third year with a class called Business Collaborative. And they, for the last couple of years, have done some really outstanding project-based learning with a number of businesses. And so for the coming year, we have 30 students enrolled in that particular class. And the goal is to work with SCALE and Business Collaborative. There is one particular string in SCALE that ties real closely into Business Collaborative so that they're really kind of working in tandem. It's just a different delivery. Students are still being exposed to real-life projects. So the SCALE courses are 4 courses. Business Communication and Technology, which is the strand that really aligns with Business Collaborative. A multidisciplinary engineering, which will be offered only in the fall. renewable energy and biosciences, which will be offered in the spring, and finally, health and human services. So health and human services and business communication and technology are very popular, and so they'll be offered both semesters. Business Collaborative is actually a year-long initiative. So it is, we're very excited for the school year to start. We've got lots to get done in the 6 weeks before school starts. And the SKILL program was actually featured in the most recent state STEM conference that was held in June. So we had a lot of interest and a lot of excitement. Keep in mind that what's unique about the Story County program is that we've actually included 8 school districts. So I think it's a real model for other places in Iowa that it's okay if your school districts work together. In terms of summer internship program, we've had 3 events, and we've actually had a record turnout in company participation. So we've had anywhere from 117 to 164 interns registered from 15 to 23 different companies. And I would tell you the Story County interns have been involved and have been participating in this program. We have 2 remaining events. We have a big event tomorrow night that'll actually be at the Research Park. We'll be talking about the environmental corridor with the students. That's part of one of the things we'll be visiting with them about. That's a great amenity in the Research Park. So that event is tomorrow night. And then we're going to end at the end of the month with really a call, not only for them to continue consider long-term employment in Story County, but really a call to get further engaged, whether it be here at college, in their own communities, and hopefully long-term here in Story County. So, again, the goal with our summer internship program is to create awareness not only just with the company they're working with, but trying to expose them to a lot of great companies and a lot of neat things going on in the county so that we can retain them after their internships. The Concierge Assistance Program, is we just rolled it out at our joint board meeting in June. We're excited about the opportunity to partner with our business community to help close the sale on folks that are considering coming to Story County to work. So we'll talk about trailing spouse assistance. We'll hold newcomer networking events and community tours. Again, we just rolled that out in June. In fact, I want to talk a little bit about the job posting board, which is WorkItEames, and I think, you know, we've been pretty clear that this is a countywide job board. We rolled out enhancements in April. We continue to see the usage go up by job seekers and employers. And aside from word of mouth, and it seems like we're always talking about this any opportunity we get, we are doing Facebook advertising. As we thought about it, it's a lot easier to go to folks that have been here in Story County as either students at DMAC or at ISU. So we're focusing a lot of our marketing efforts on the alumni associations, folks visiting Ames this fall for various events, through the Society of Human Resource Management, the Cyclone chapter of that, and then through our normal networks and weekly communications and social and business events we hold at the Chamber and Economic Development. So that's my report as it relates to workforce. And next week on your consent agenda will actually be a recap of our year expenses as they relate to the fiscal year of the county. So that will be coming next week. So you'll have an actual review of the scope of what that initiative is for the organization. So any questions on workforce before I get into the Economic Development Services? Good. So, a couple things as it relates to the Economic Development Services. I did want to report that there has been a change made to my job title. So my job title just is Director of Workforce Solutions, but as a part of that, I do have kind of the key assignment to be your central point as it relates to economic development. And we've had a conversation, and I know I think I have about 3 of you, that while I may be your point, there is 11 other folks in our offices that can be available to assist communities for specific projects, whether it be marketing, graphic arts, one of our interns getting involved. So I think it is a good change to reflect that it's not just one person that holds this responsibility. It's just one person that's really the key contact. The year-end financial expenses to reflect your fiscal year have been submitted and are part of your consent for today as well.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
As I reviewed those expenses, I saw that we were charged for the previous contact to attend Leadership Iowa, and that was several thousand dollars. But I just wanted to kind of make a clarification, is we pay a lump sum, period. So however that's assigned internally is somewhat up to the Economic Development Corporation, in case someone would look at that and wonder why we were paying that. Because we are paying for the entire staff and their services. But yeah, when I caught that, I had to back up and think a minute.
Yep.
I think that's a great point to bring out, that is that it really is ultimately, you know, the organization decide how best or what is needed to best support the communities of Story County. So, but again, it's there to make sure that you know that we aren't sitting on those funds and that they are being invested to support enhanced economic development in Story County, specifically as it relates to the rural communities. What I've been doing since I started in April is just generally trying to keep track, and so when we're in front of you, we can be able to say, here's what we've actually been doing and the number of contacts we're making. So the first one really deals with community contacts and connections, so that might be phone calls, an actual conversation with either a project or somebody from the community. So in this quarter, there have been 78 of those contacts and connections. I've actually, and with a number of you at different times, visited communities, especially in the focus area of the 10 that are under 2,000. So we've made 33 visits, and I'd say a lot of those you were with me or I was with you. I've had 17 project meetings, and I'd like to maybe perhaps provide a little bit more detail here. So when we're talking about projects, this would be somebody interested in housing development, somebody interested in opening a business, somebody that may have a business that wants to enhance their operation. It might be our offices reaching out to talk about an available building in one of the communities or an available space. So really is a number of different things, but just speaking in general, there is a lot of interest in doing enhanced housing in our rural communities. So a great number of the project meetings have been about do we have likely suspects within the existing community that might be interested in doing housing, or potentially bringing others in to talk about housing. So I would say there have been some business meetings, but I think it's important. Housing is on a lot of our minds. A number of those project meetings are related to housing. So I've been with you 10 different times in those first 3 months. Yes, I've attended 6 council meetings, again, a lot with you to actually be introduced and our services explained to those city councils. Part of our job, most importantly, is to assist these communities in marketing. And so just some marketing highlights and potential networking things that I'd like to highlight as I close my time here with you is that we do belong to the Community Venture Network. And we've seen this as really a good opportunity to attract some projects that might be a good match to our rural communities. We're able to bring a project, for example, to the community of Cambridge, actually, from this venture network. I'm actually interested in collecting some information from Story City that is a lead that came out of that. So it really is about trying to match what might be for buildings and facilities and open spaces in the communities with opportunities out of that network. They meet quarterly. The next event is in August. Abby from Story City will be going with me. Also extended an invitation from Jennifer at Slater. They have a couple open buildings. I think she will get a great deal out of that event. So, yeah, we continue to assist communities putting project proposals together. In some instances, we've been able to submit with their information. Also was going to mention that there is a state database called LOIS, and the Collins Fire Department building came open, and so that's an example of a large enough building that we could put on that database. So we're glad to do that. And there's the staff in Ames is out trade shows or making calls on headquarters and site selectors. We pull the information out of LOIS, but it is really important. The state accesses that information utility, so we're here to help. You know, we do continue to look for opportunities for network. I think I said, I think the Community Venture Network is a great opportunity. We attended the SMART conference. I had invited Boris to join me for that. So we'll continue to look for opportunities to expand our staff's knowledge in order to be good resources for those communities. When it makes sense, we'll invite members of those communities to come with us. So it's been a busy 90 days. It's been a real treat to be able to work with all of you, and your introduction into these communities has been really, really, really helpful. So any questions you have for me at this time?
Well, so first of all, thank you. Secondly, question for me.
Is the fire station in Collins Town?
You know, they've had a lot of activity on that, but it is still on the market, according to.
Okay.
But yeah, so we'll have a chance. Marty and I are going to be going to Collins on Thursday night, so lunch sure we'll hear a better update. But there isn't a whole lot of available buildings, even in Ames. So the fact that when we get a building open, we want to jump on that and try to market that. Story City has two available buildings, too, that again, we're trying to work with them to try to attract the right company. You know, not all companies are created equal. We want to make sure we're ensuring that it's the right match for the community in Story County.
Perfect, Morris.
No, then, thanks.
I'll just say this. So Story County was so well served by Drew Camp that when Drew moved to another area in the organization, I had real concerns about what was going to happen to our program. But the ABC and the AM Chamber hit a home run in hiring you, Brendan. You brought great energy and enthusiasm and expertise, and our smaller communities are sure lucky to have you serving, and we sure appreciate all your work.
Well, thanks. We've got a lot of work ahead of us, guys.
Outstanding.
Thank you, Brendan.
Next is agency reports, and we've got Ireland Ball here today. Cindy. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. My name is Cynthia Skyler Bishop, and I'm with Ireland Ball. I'm the CEO there. And this is Megan Mayer, and Megan is the clinic director. And we just want to take a few minutes to talk to you about what Ireland Ball is up to, and we appreciate the time. So we'll take some time to, Megan's going to talk about what's happening at the clinic, and then I'll give an overview of what's happening at Ireland Ball and some challenges as well as some opportunities that we have. And then you can certainly take questions.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, good morning. Thank you for having us this morning. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been with Ireland Ball since about January, and I can tell you we've been extremely busy in this market in that time. So we have spent quite a bit of time in partnership through a State of Iowa block grant with a vendor, MTM Services. So we've spent a lot of human capital time and, frankly, IT time as well, really working to cement some new best practices for the organization. So for us, that's meant a change in our staffing models, really driving our clinicians to higher levels of productivity. It's meant a step back, frankly, to look at what the market, Ames, Story County specifically, need. And so that's challenged us really to look at staffing. I'm sure Cynthia's going to talk about that today as one of our challenges is the continued provider shortage and recruiting for the market. But for us, we recognized there was a high need in this region, specifically for a female. And so we're really happy to report that we have cemented new staff. This week we are beginning to transition a new female therapist at our AMES office, and so we're hopeful that that will assist. We have many individuals from Iowa State University through Victim Services and other areas that have specifically requested a female presence, and so we're extremely excited to report that we have that therapist on board with us at the AMES clinic now. We also were able to recruit a licensed independent social worker, so that's helping us with our Medicare population as well, and phenomenal gentleman who frankly has opened up some new avenues for us with that client population as well. So lots of work there in recruiting. We continue to try to recruit for another therapist for our staff and have one individual now who serves us through telehealth as a nurse practitioner with a psych certificate. Again, another one of our struggles. We would like to recruit another in-person nurse practitioner, but we're struggling to bring that talent to the area as well. So that's an update as for where we stand on staffing. As far as ability to get into our clinic, you really could get in today to see a provider for therapy and for a med appointment. I looked this morning and you could get in for a med check today. It would take until about Monday to get a full-blown med eval. And, of course, we offer those in partnership with several of our programs. I'm sure that you're aware we work with Mary Greeley and offer a connections program with the hospital whereby we work with individuals who have mental health needs to make sure that we're following them and wrapping community services around them post-discharge from the hospital, really to try to stave off ER admissions and inpatient readmissions. So that program in partnership with Mary Greeley continues to be successful. We hear great stories from our clients that my favorite one I think that I've heard recently is a gentleman who now calls our therapist and has told her many times, "I feel like someone cares about me." You check in and his new pattern is instead of going to the ER when he's feeling down or depressed for services, he'll actually call her first. And so we know actively through cases like that that we're staving off some ER, high-cost ER and high-cost readmissions. So great patient safety and quality story there. We also have our police liaison position. That individual works with the Ames Police Department to really help, again, individuals who are, I don't want to say seeking services because they would probably prefer not to be with the PD, but engaged in those services with the PD who have mental health needs. And so we partner with the police department in that respect to, again, make sure we're wrapping services around that individual, getting them linked in for therapy and medication services as they need. We have spent a great deal of time really working on how we make sure our processes are standard, whether you present to our clinics in the Des Moines or Warren County region or here in Boone and Ames. And so that has been a lot of work for staff to really think about new ways of doing work, how we're more efficient, and that's resulted in some higher productivity for our staff and, frankly, more access then for our clients. We continue to have a walk-in clinic on Thursdays. I will tell you, our volume in the last month, for some reason, has been extremely high with up to 10 individuals walking into that clinic, and that's a continued struggle for us to meet the needs of those walk-in clients, given the fact that, as I shared, we are just short on that Medicare, specifically with one provider really that can really see that Medicare clientele right now. So I would say despite all of those great motions forward, our biggest challenges continue to be our ability to recruit providers. I think that's consistent across our organization. And then second, I would piggyback on to the comments of Optime, we see those challenges in our reimbursement as well. And so I will pause there. I've taken up a lot of air time, I recognize. I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Yeah, questions.
We've got another presentation on ABC as far as how they provide a platform or multiple platforms to advertise for new workers. How do you do it?
Yeah,
where do you go when you tell the world that, hey, we need help?
Yeah, so our HR department is frankly phenomenal with reaching out. What we are starting to do, we're in some discussion with Unity Point Health, and so we're actually now reaching out to the colleges and trying to cement those relationships early on. Allen College in Waterloo. And so, similar to our last presenter, we're trying to grab them early. We have many individuals on our staff who utilize us to help them get their former LISW certificate. They need the supervision hours. So some of that is by offering that to, as an incentive. We were able to recruit staff in. The retention piece is a struggle. We're community health, and so we have struggles that, frankly, private payers, private industries don't often have. But we use Indeed. We use all of the major platforms. And frankly, networking is how we're getting a lot of individuals. The two most recent we got because of relationships other staff members had, either in past work lives or frankly just by talking with members of the AIMS community. That's how we got our LI here, was referral and recommendation from others.
You know, this is a significant issue. We've even tried to, through our association, have addressed the issue of not finding LISWs, because a licensed independent social worker is the only type of therapist that can treat the Medicare population. And because we're a community health center, we have a lot of Medicare folks, and we want to continue to treat them, because as Ireley Ball, we are the safety net. We're a safety net organization, and we want to continue to be that. But it's hard to recruit LISWs because you're also competing with a lot of hospital-based systems, and you're competing with managed care companies who all want that particular license. So it's challenging, but we try to grow them within our organization and keep them after we provide a lot of classes of supervision, 2 years of supervision. Mm-hmm. And then also with the med providers, nurse practitioners, they're very difficult. And we have our med provider is actually a telehealth provider from Washington State. And telehealth is a great option for med providers if you can't get someone on site. Is it the best option? Probably not. But it's an option. But unfortunately, funders are making it more difficult to draw down dollars. Medicare just decreased our rate 2 months ago. So anybody that has a telehealth provider, our Medicare rate has been decreased by 30% to use telehealth. And it's so unfortunate. And now the state is looking at doing something similar. So, you know, that's really what our option is to use telehealth providers. And now they're decreasing our rate if you use telehealth providers. So it's unfortunate, but, you know, we're doing the best we can with trying to recruit providers as well as try to, we have two current nurses within our staff that are looking at, and if not one, two have actually applied to become nurse practitioners. So we're trying to grow them within our own agency.
Good luck there.
Remember having a conversation probably 3 or 4 years ago now with a woman who was at the time president of the local nominee. And she said, what if we just went out and tried to raise money privately to basically pay a student, a resident in psychiatry, like $100,000 if that person would come here for 2 years, you know, but who's going to raise that? So anyway, I do have a couple questions, okay? The first one really has to do with connections and the police liaison program. And I raised this concern before. I attend regularly the juvenile justice committee meetings, have been at for, you know, years, okay? And the concern comes up in that the clients are supposed to have informed choice of their providers. And so the concern is when you're taking someone who doesn't already have a provider and are picked up by the police, and they're automatically funneled into Ireley Ball when they have other options available in the community. And I've read that with Chuck Sykosh too. So I understand that most likely if that person is picked up in the community, they also might qualify under Medicaid or something. I mean, you know, they don't. But there are people out there who have private pay providers that are being funneled in. And so I just want to raise that point that it's in having that program, it's very, very important that Ireland Ball make it very clear to people that they can choose another mental health provider to go ahead and receive those services. And I think that's the same with the Connections program, correct? I mean, you're getting a funnel from another government entity for preference. So I'm going to just advise you to use it wisely and make sure that the clients know that. The other thing is that economically, how is it going? Because I understand that anybody providing mental health services right now, they're having a very difficult time breaking even. How about for you?
That's been a struggle. You know, what Bill said, agreed. And everything that Bill said. We continue to have the same struggles that Bill's having. It's been difficult to work with the managed care companies. In terms of getting payments, there are lots of denials. We have restructured. What I understand why managed care was brought in to save money, but what has happened is it's on the backs of the providers. We have recently added a high-level person to manage our revenue cycle, which we never had before. And now, as of last week, we hired two more people to manage denials. Those are costs that we've never had to have before. But we have had to hire folks and add more administrative costs to manage three managed care companies. Also, in addition to that, payment's a problem. We've also had to add a clearinghouse, which was additional cost, $30,000 clearinghouse.
Iowa Behavioral Health Network, are you in it also, or a different clearinghouse?
We're not in that association. Okay. We're in a different association with IACP. But, yeah, so we have, it's been a significant problem. We continue to have problems. We've met with legislators throughout the last legislative session. They are all aware. They know this is an issue. But fixing it is, I don't know if anybody really knows how they're going to fix it. We also have, with the managed care companies, I don't know if you've experienced this, Bill, we've had a lot of audits. So people coming in, and one particular managed care company specifically said, we are doing these audits to recoup. So that is the sole point of having audits. So we've had, with one, since December, we've had three separate audits because we have a lot of programs. This isn't for mental health providers. We do this because we really enjoy what we're doing and we know that there's a reason and there's a need for what we do, and that's why we do it. But it's not a real easy business to be in. However, we are we did sign a letter of intent to affiliate with Community Point, and I think that's a big win for us. We hope to have that affiliation completed by the end of the year, hopefully this fall. And it's helpful to be attached to a larger organization. And that's really strategically our plan for continuing to survive in this really difficult environment right now.
Well, thank you so much. So I just want to say how appreciative I am to Ireland Ball. You guys came into Scoria County before you were CEO, but with the organization at a time that Scoria County really, really needed you to provide that safety net for us. And while I really appreciate what Morris had to say about the realities that all potential clients should have choices and they should be able to get where they need to go, I want to spend that a little bit, and I want to say I am so appreciative that you guys do provide that baseline safety net for the people that really don't have anywhere else to go. And the first question should not be, at least in my mind, do you want to go somewhere else? Do you want, you know, we can have you go over here or just a different provider. It should be, what do you need? What can we do to help? And I know you guys provide that, and we're so appreciative. Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Story time. I saw Jane here. Jane, we tried to do this a couple times.
Uh-huh.
How are you today?
Good. Doing good.
I'm Jane. I'm the Storytime Chapter of Maxwell. Things are going great. Storytime, we're licensed for 42 kids. And right now we have a waiting list of 9 on it. We're full. We have families from Collins, Maxwell, Colo, and even Huxley now on the waiting list. Because there's such a need for daycare at this point. So we're real busy. I've got the same staff I've had for, I have a real kids staff. The newest person's been there 3 years. I've been there 22. So I've seen a lot of changes, and it's all, we're doing great. Going uphill, and things are going good.
Well, to me, story time is one of the great success stories of what can happen in a small town with great leadership, and the way it's grown and the way it's been so stable since you've been there, I think is a real credit to you, but the entire organization. So thank you.
Yeah, no, the organization itself has been.
Absolutely.
When you say you have a waiting list, is that because of staff or space limitations?
Space. Because we're licensed for 42 kids, so at this point I'm full. And once summer's over, a lot of the school kids won't come back, and so then I'll have room for more little younger people.
Okay. Yeah, Maxwell is just slowly growing itself, so I'm not surprised to hear that's your story.
Yeah.
Because you had construction, and the way people just don't think of Maxwell, Iowa, with new home construction and new families, but that's what it is.
Yes. Houses are going up for sale and selling in a week.
Yeah, it's helping right now. More questions?
None. Good to see you again, Jim.
Anything else for us? Thank you so much for what you're doing.
No, things are going good, and we're keep moving upwards, so.
Outstanding. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thanks. Consideration of minutes from June 27th.
So, second.
We have a motion to second. Any notations, additions, corrections?
None.
G.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, board.
I would so move as listed.
Second.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims.
Yes, as listed.
I second.
We got a motion and a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda board. Anything to pull or any notations?
I'd like to pull number 14, the animal control contract. I see you in the back.
All right. Pull number 14. Do I have a motion with that pull?
I so move that we move the consent agenda with the removal of pull of number 14.
I would second that.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Let's go right to 14, animal control contract. Sue, come on up.
Come on up, Sue.
So staff and Supervisor Olson have worked hard on putting together a revised contract for our smaller towns that wish to enter into that agreement. Sue, what can you tell us about the process or where we are today as we consider the contract? And Deb, thank you for joining us. I know you've been part of that.
Well, we've added some additions to the contract so that we are hopeful that this will cover whatever gray areas might have been seen in the previous contract. And there's not a lot of changes, but I think the changes that were made were changes that the city felt were something that were important and needed to be taken care of. We have left some language open, so that some of this is at our discretion, which, you know, I like black areas, I don't like gray areas. However, sometimes you need that discretion available to you because you don't know what you're going to be dealing with. So we've made some changes, and for the most part, we're going to ask, for instance, a lot of the cities have said that, you know, when we respond, we wait for their phone call to respond, and that's how it's always been done. And so checking, there's cities that still want to be called, but there's others that are going to say, hey, come, we don't need an okay from us. If you feel enough of a reason to come, we'll make sure that we're on board with this. So that's one of the biggest changes. Mm-hmm. And we're giving the cities the options to decide on the contract if that's what they want to do. And then they leave us with an emergency number so that, you know, if they are one of the cities that want to be contacted first, we do have some place to go with it before we go to that particular city.
Sure.
We don't have a trip charge with our contract towns. However, we had to implement one. I guess the biggest thing is from 8 to 3, there's no trip charge for our services. But we had to implement or keep the one we had for evenings and overnights, which is $50 per officer to go out. Sometimes that might only involve one. Sometimes, depending on the situation, it could be two. We are asking the city to step up in that if they have a city or a person that lives in their city that is a there seems to be a constant problem, like a barking dog or an animal running at large, or they're hoarding 40 cats, that the city step in first and address the situation so that, you know, they know that it's started at the base of where it's at, gone from the city. If the city tries to reach some sort of an agreement with people and cannot, then it comes to us, and we will then go forward with a letter from us. We really have gotten to where we like personal visits the best because we don't want our letters to sound demanding, and I've discovered you get more flies with honey than you do vinegar, so paying people a personal visit has helped a lot, so that's what we usually try to do in these situations. And we've had some parts of the contract, such as We occasionally will get an animal that we don't believe is rabid, but we don't know that for sure, but an animal that's very aggressive, and have it be in the shelter, whether it's in the back where the quarantine area kind of is or not, is an extreme danger to employees to even try to handle. When you are opening the door to put food in and you're sliding it in and that animal's coming at you to come out the door, I feel that for the sake of the employees there, and as well as the animal, that sometimes we will hold the animals less than 7 days, which is what our agreement is, if that is a problem. Or if we see an animal that is, you know, hopelessly sick or injured, we're not going to, you know, if it's been hit by a car, and we pick it up, for instance, from the city of Colo, and it's going to die, we'll take it to a vet, and we will have it put to sleep. Right away. We're not going to have that animal suffer, try to sustain its life for the next 6 days after that. So there are some changes like that to the contract. Also, some of this, we will provide, we used to do cat and dog adoption service, and we've changed it to other domesticated animals, small animals in particular, but this is the age where everybody wants a different pet. A cat dog sometimes is getting a little boring. So let's go out there and get those ferrets, and let's get those iguanas, and let's have some snakes. And, you know, and that's never been in our contract before, but it's a good thing to have in there. So that, again, that gray area is gone, and yes, we will take care of it. And it could even apply. Some of the cities are, you know, at the very edge of their towns have animals like horses, or they might have a few goats or something like that, and if that would become a problem, we would also, you know, interject ourselves into that to make sure that it's taken care of. So that's a big change. Our scope of services is going to be pursuant to the Story County Animal Control Ordinance, and that is very important because when we're looking at our county of 10 contract towns, when we are dealing with an ordinance from each of the towns, and they're all different, and we're trying to, like, handle a problem, and we're going, okay, let's grab their ordinance so we see. It's going to be so much easier for us to use our ordinance and, you know, work off of that, because we feel that our ordinance, for the most part, is a good ordinance. There's a few changes that can be made, but our ordinance is a lot stronger, and the wording is a lot stronger. So we would prefer to work off the Story County ordinance.
Well, and the other part to this to remember is, no city is required to enter into an agreement with us. If they enter into an agreement with us, they're asking us to provide the service. And we're going to provide the service as we see it, not as they see it. And if they want to find somebody else or they want to do it themselves, they sure have the power to do that.
Right. But we are trying to provide, we've tried to maybe spread out our scope of services a little bit better. And it'll cover, one of the things on here was at the top under purpose, it says Story County will not provide service with regard to wild animals except as noted in the scope of services and in the sole discretion of Story County. So, if you have a raccoon that's kind of hanging around and, we will assist with that if it's a health concern. But a lot of things people need to remember is there's an old saying that you only see rabid animals out during the day. You only see raccoons and skunk and everything else out during the day if they're sick. And that is certainly not the case, especially during the seasons when they're having their babies. They're out all times of day. You see them everywhere. Not to say that there aren't sick ones. So I think we needed to make sure that we're falling in and not jumping the gun and just killing things because we're seeing them out during the daytime. And so I think that actually also helps with what we will and won't do. Now, if we see one that somebody says it's chasing somebody, it's acting very aggressive, running raccoons will growl. Skunks, most people just veer away from. We don't even have to worry about that. They just run the other way. Possums are pretty harmless. But it is mostly a raccoon thing. So we've changed that, and we feel that fits what we would be able to offer, but would also help the city out if needed.
Sure. Well, really appreciate you and Deb and Supervisor Olson and Ethan Anderson, who I know helped get this done. It was time. Story County has traditionally, and this is many years before any of us set up here, has traditionally provided animal control services that go beyond what other counties do. So it directly coincides with the amount of time you've been serving as the animal control director, and I think that's where the credit lies. We sure appreciate what you've done. It was time to get this updated. I really appreciate you guys digging into it. Laura, anything to add?
Just now, the next steps in the process are we have completed a listing of our adoptions and our guests for the last year, and we're going to go over that this week. The four of us will meet and kind of discuss about the successes here and philosophy about how best to handle animals and what we can do from a marketing standpoint or, adoptions, promotion, etc. The contract itself will go out with a letter that Sue usually sends out with the yearly contract. Sue and Deb will be working on the changes to point out the changes, and I will send an email to all the counties or the cities because they have been waiting to hear what we were going to send back, so I'll let them know it's on the way. And then the next step after that is we'll be spending the next probably 2 to 3 months and taking a look at what are the other ordinances that are out there, the practices, what would we want to possibly change in our animal control ordinance. Can we address hoarding, for example, under what the state code allows us to do? So we aren't done, but it's been, I'm really pleased how quickly it's moved because, I keep on wanting to push things more quickly. So anyway,
and I keep saying this is government.
Yeah.
Make a motion for us, Laura.
I would move that we accept this new animal control contract to send out to the municipalities, and it actually is a 2080 agreement, I guess, right?
No, a second. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes, and thank you guys for your work. So that completes consent agenda. Now we're moving on to public hearing items. Consideration of Resolution 1806, amending the Urban Renewal Plan. Leanne Hart.
Morning, Mrs. Harder.
What is before you today, is Resolution 1806, and that is action by the board on amending the urban renewal plan for the Story County Urban Renewal Area. I'm going to go over the amendments quickly that have been brought before you today, and then the action on the resolution and also a wrap-up of the next steps. A copy of the proposed changes were on today's agenda. So quickly, in section one, removing the end of the last paragraph.
Yeah, and let's stop right there because I understood the rest of the amendment. I don't remember why we talked about making this amendment.
It was in last part of May, I think it was the May 30th meeting, I brought this to the board's attention, the draft plan, and I think the Supervisor Olsman questioned the intention of the language, and I recall the discussion was this was boilerplate language that was part of the original language that was drafted by Bob Johnston, mm-hmm. and the recommendation recommendation action was to remove that, strike that language.
But don't we intend for this plan to guide us in promoting economic development activities?
Well, I don't know that it's in promoting economic development activities. That would indicate here from what it says that this urban renewal plan takes some kind of precedence. And then, and how are we promoting economic development here? I just felt it was unnecessary, especially if we expand how we would, in fact, be using the urban renewal funds in the future.
Okay, but the first line of the second paragraph above this says, county boards of supervisors may create economic development urban renewal areas. An economic development urban renewal area may be an area of the county anyway. It goes on to talk about it. It seems to me that this is a if not necessary, at least very germane piece of this entire section.
Well, I think it also binds future boards to this a little bit. It says it will guide the county, capital C, in promoting economic development, but there are other goals even of an urban renewal plan. There's slum and blight. We don't use it a lot, you know, for that situation. So, I felt that it just, I feel that it gives an unintended. It says also intended, but I don't think it's actually, are we really intending to only allow this plan to guide to promoting economic development?
Well, it doesn't say only. So, I mean, you're inserting a word there. It said it is also intended, in addition to, not only. It is also intended that this urban renewal plan will guide the county in promoting economic development, and I believe that sentence is exactly right, and so I'm just curious why we decided we would strike this. I don't recall it.
I think Leanne did a good job of explaining why. It was a boilerplate. It really didn't do anything to truly add to how we might use the program in all of its diversity.
Okay, I think it does. I'm not in favor of striking that one line, but let's move on. We'll come back to that. Leanne, go ahead.
Section 2 is the section of the plan wherein actually it appears in two sections of the plan. The projects that are eligible for funding, whether it be the grant programs, which you'll see later this summer, or in a specific case, the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor, simply what we're doing is replacing Iowa State University Research Park, SCCB Park, that's the official name. Mm-hmm. Last year, at this time, we didn't have that name. Then you go to Section 5, it's really housekeeping, and a couple instances to change this for the current year and out of years. But then again, in the listing of projects, recognizing that it's now at Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. And then under the tax increment financing procedures in Section 6, we always change the dates again to represent the fiscal year in which the base valuation is set. And then lastly, Section 8, the county financial information, which my apologies, it's difficult to read on the screen, at least from where I'm sitting. But this is where we amend the valuation. And would you recognize that the proposed TIF debt to be incurred in the table is $1.5 million? I'll get to that shortly. Those are the nature of the changes as proposed. The plan, or the map itself is amended as well as the legend to show again the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor name rather than the former Iowa State University Research Park, Storytime Conservation Board Park. So your next steps, obviously action today on the resolution number 1806, and then I'll be coming forward in the next few weeks with the financing process. I have a schedule up there, as was approved by the board earlier in May, for this phase two of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor.
Super. And no commercial wind towers this year.
No properties added with this specific change.
But next year we'll have some to consider, right, as they roll up online, since we had some construction.
Those were already.
Okay.
That's the Michelangelo's.
Those that already broken ground and had preliminary permits
were added last year.
Does that, speaking of Michelangelo, you've got Michelangelo 3 there from added properties last fall. All those numbers represent 3 towers? Just a housekeeping thing.
Each, so in case of wind turbines, as opposed to, we'll use better equipment since this is in here too. If you see the parcel numbers,
right,
there's a 1. At some point, we'll have to go back and amend this table because those haven't been assigned in building on leased land parcel number yet, or they haven't when we made these changes. But yes, to answer your question, it does represent the tower
location
site.
All right.
That's some housekeeping we'll have to do to make sure that we match our real estate records.
Okay. Good. Other questions for Leanne before we open the public hearing? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody who would like to address resolution number 1806. And seeing no one moving, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action. So in adopting this, we're also adopting our urban renewal plan. We've got 2 choices here based on the conversation that Supervisor Olson and I just had. We can adopt it as presented, or we can make an amendment to what is before us and adopt that.
I'm going to move that we adopt it as presented.
Okay, I don't hear a second coming forth. Do I have any other motions?
I'd like to speak to it from that motion. I have no unease with the phraseology, because when I read it in parse economic development, I go to the development and I jump to renewal, and I believe that they're linked, and I have no qualms with the fact that economics will probably follow along with renewal and development. So I would propose that we announce 1806 with the inclusion of the struck paragraph at the end of section 1.
And I'll second that. So we have a motion to second. Let's just be clear, Marty, to make sure I seconded what I thought I seconded. You're asking that we go ahead and adopt this, but we include the sentence. It is also intended that this urban renewal plan will guide the county in promoting economic development.
That is my motion.
Okay, and that is what I intended to say. Discussion.
I think we've already had it.
Okay, super. Chief.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Olson.
No.
Olson votes no on resolution 1806. Passed.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thanks, Leanne. Next item were 2 additional items, but let's do this because Story County is in the middle of its water challenge for the month. We're going to take a 2-minute recess for those of us in the middle of the water challenge.
Okay.
Right. All right. We are going back into session. And the first item on additional items is acknowledgement and discussion of a letter received regarding traffic control system at 295th and 680th. And this is Deb and Darren talking to us about this. So this letter was sent on June 30th. Board Supervisor received a copy. I called Carol Myers and told her that her concerns would not be taken lightly, and we would, in fact, talk about it. I referred it back to Deb and Darren, who were both aware of it, and asked to get on a board agenda so that we could talk about it here.
The letter is concerning the traffic control system that's been installed at the intersection of 295th Street and 680th Avenue, Story County. So Darren's brought the map up and or the location and the way.
I also called Carol just to make sure I understand. Still her concern and let her know we'd be discussing it as well. This is a Carol's residence right here. So this is the intersection we're talking about. I would point out it's a three-way stop, which is a bit unusual, but the reason for that is that there's a steep grade that goes down to this culvert, and farmers had concerns that they had to stop here. They had a hard time getting up that hill, so the main reason why that stop sign was left out, but the other three corners are controlled by stop signs. This is looking east. Probably the main reason for the stop sign is this hill here. You cannot see traffic as you approach the intersection. This is when you get right up to that stop sign and look to the north, you can get around this. The stop signs went in 17 years ago, and at that time I remember we considered cutting this hill down, but it became a big project and a bunch of utilities that were going to be pretty costly to relocate. So we went with the stop sign option instead. Typically, we don't like to have stop signs. In general, it's 30 to 40 vehicles a day coming from all four sides of this intersection. That's not generally enough to add stop signs unless you have a sight distance issue. Otherwise, you'll run into this problem where people will enter these intersections every day and never see another car. So what do they eventually start doing? Running the stop sign. That's what we don't want to have, because that's when you can have the real severe accidents, when the people that don't have stop signs just run through it without looking and get, you know, hit without slowing down at all. This is looking south. Again, this is the hill on this side. You have to cut that way back to this farm field to get that down far enough where you can see a car approaching that intersection. It's difficult to tell, but that's where that hill goes down to the east, and we have since replaced that box culvert and built that road up, so it's a little flatter than it used to be when these stop signs originally put in. That's all the slides I have on that, but I did verify with her there's nothing that she had in mind for traffic control that she would like to see done. It's more of an enforcement thing. I know it's difficult for the sheriff to get a lot of rural intersections out there to have a presence with these is what it's difficult for the sheriff to do.
So would there be value in considering going to a full four-way stop there and try to get people used to that as a stop intersection no matter which way you're coming? In my mind, the worst-case scenario is somebody pulls up to that stop sign and they don't recognize that it's not a stop as you're coming from the left and pull out in front of somebody who's not slowing down. And then the second question would be, can we add any flags to the top of the stop sign just to make them a little more visible? How difficult would that be? So I think since I've been here, Darren, we've only put stop signs on one gravel road since I've been sitting here, and that was 180th where it crossed 530th going up toward Gilbert High School.
Okay. I don't remember how much. We have two more on the agenda today, but well, one gravel anyway. But yeah. We've added a few. Some are post-accident ones. There have been no accidents here. I checked the accident record for the past 10 years. There's been no accidents here. I wouldn't be completely opposed to adding. We have the same concern when you leave one segment off.
Yeah. Whether that. Well, especially now that we've addressed it somewhat with building up the road.
I won't be opposed to that. The only reason I wouldn't want to put it is it'll continue to get run, and we don't want to promote ignoring stop signs. That'd be my only concern, but I could go either way at this one since we brought that road up.
Yeah, so I think my preference would be more that we ask Darren to put together a proposal to add a stop sign here and possibly Darren adding some kind of flag or something that just draw more attention to the three stop signs we already have. And then I would also like board for us to reach out to Sheriff Fitzgerald to make sure he's aware. I mean, he got the letter as well, but make sure he's aware and what, if any, steps we're taking. Because he does a great job understanding that, you know, personnel-wise, it's hard to have somebody here a lot. But if we have somebody here even irregularly, people get used to occasionally seeing an officer sitting there and it'll change behavior somewhat.
He did say it was mostly the north-south traffic that she's concerned about, so is it okay if we just put the flags on those for now?
I'm not suggesting what we should do. I'm asking you to look at it.
If we add the new one, I know that we probably ought to have a flag on it to draw attention to it, too, so it looks good on all fours. Yeah. Right, well, I'll propose.
More thoughts, questions?
Carol must think she's really popular because I called her Sunday, too. Worked with her husband, Dale, when I came back from Iowa in the funeral home down in Maxwell, and known Carol since then. She had said that a supervising sheriff's officer had come out on Saturday, and through the course of his time out there, I believe they issued two tickets for running stop signs, and she thought it was more of an enforcement issue. Yes, it would be nice if the Birchmeyer Farm were shaded and sloped in a way that would give vision to it. I guess I come down on the other side of it, where I don't think from the east there, as you're looking, that approach necessarily, in my mind, knowing the road, having driven it many, many times, would it would be worth a stop to make it a completely controlled intersection. I think on an intersectional basis, I would ask the Sheriff's Department if to make a presence known, because I think the memo goes out when the locals start getting tickets for running stop signs that they think they can do with impunity. All of a sudden, they become more mindful of our traffic laws, and then they start self-policing themselves. So I would say, yes, you can certainly go to that trouble, but the thing is, it becomes an inconvenience, and it's not the fact that you went in and shaped the road with a new box culvert, that's great, but that is still a highly traveled ag corner, and I would say that you have very limited return on another stop sign.
Sure.
My 2 cents.
Mm-hmm. Laura?
I don't have anything really to add to this. I mean, I've heard everything. It sounds like there are a couple different approaches, and really, since the Sheriff's Department is aware also that there's a concern, and whatever the county engineer feels would be most effective, Darren, how much would it cost to put in two more stop signs?
One more
stop sign that also requires a stop ahead sign, so it's really two signs that have to go in. So that would be roughly $200 in materials and then some labor.
Okay. But Marty, you're saying that they heavily use egg corners, so.
I drove it many times. It is, you have a very, it is a county corner that is surrounded by farm fields, populated by farmers, and that is their, it's a nexus approach, east, west, north, south. So I think to me, I get it where you can sit there and say, well, a stop sign would give us what? But I can sit there and tell you, talking to Carol, who brought this letter before us, that she believes just a little bit of an additional presence by the Sheriff's Department would probably give us a better return.
Okay.
Because I think that you can correctively change people's behavior in a way that they find that there is a downside. I think we've done it society with smoking and, fill in the blank there. I think that once, and she was very pleased that she said she doesn't want to have any of her neighbors necessarily getting tickets, but then again, she has, in her time living out there with her husband, had three fatal accidents or very serious injury accidents on her corner of her house. And the backstory is she lost a grandson in a fatal accident on a farm. If you remember that crash from 2 summers ago down there, that was her grandson of hers. So she's vested in this interest, and she thinks this, to her takeaway, at least from my mind, was if the Sheriff's Department could give a presence in a way that the locals that transit this intersection see, that we probably have the outcomes to make everybody better.
Okay.
I would leave it up to you, but I would be less inclined to think a stop sign is going to put us in a better situation, because if they're already running three, who's to say they don't run four?
So it sounds like maybe a good idea in the interim is, Marty, since you know her, you've had a discussion with her. I know Rick called her, too, but it sounds like Marty has a more continuous connection with her about maybe contact or following up with the Sheriff's Department.
I went out there yesterday. I went to stop because I suspected Sergeant Nick Laney lives about 4 miles as the crow flies from this, and I thought it was a command officer who was out there. I thought it might have been him, but he wasn't in yesterday. I stopped out seeing Andrew Rouse talking about E911 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I did go to the effort to do that yesterday, and I still, this is one of those things, I'd like to find out what they would do on a patrol basis that could just, because they're almost equal distance in from Highway 65 and S27 on a highly traveled gravel road, and the thing is just a set in some farm lane, as you can see, Carol's house right there.
if you've already got two, a couple more might go a long ways to getting this thing put to bed, or at least in the interim.
Sure. All right, so what I take from this conversation is I can easily reach out to the sheriff, talk with him about our conversation today, and ask that he take a look at what his staff can do to have a little more presence out there. And Darren, I think what you've got from this conversation is you really get yin and yang from the board sitting up here, which I think means to you, do what you do as county engineer. If this warrants a recommendation to the board, bring it to us, and if it doesn't, don't worry about it.
I'll tell you, this thing feel a little more. My preference would have been, I don't know how that third stop sign got put in there. My preference would be a two-way stop and the other way through. I don't know why they added that third stop sign.
The east-west?
Yes.
You would do the north-south. Yeah.
Which is a reason, if you decide that that's the way that you think we need to go, that's a reasonable recommendation to me. I would say then we better have big signs saying two-way stop, cross-traffic does not stop.
Rarely does anybody remove signs once they're in. So it's very important when we put new signs in to make sure they're necessary because you don't want to take them out. There's a lot more lives away.
Yep. So balls in your court, figure out what, if anything, we're going to discuss in the future.
That's fair.
Okay? Good. I'll talk to the sheriff and go from there. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Let's see. Next item is discussing consideration of having staff assemble a report containing public safety statistics and quality of life comments on first year of legal sale and use of fireworks in Story County. Lawrence?
Yes, I think we all got comments. It sounds like at least that all of us got comments from various constituents around the county about the downside, what they felt was the downside of fireworks, most of them having to do with people not obeying their community's relative ordinance or fire risk, noise, threat, noise, etc. So we all, I believe, received one email that the person was quite eloquent and quite put out and raised a couple of good concerns. And I don't know that we can address a lot of those concerns, but what it did strike me is that if we asked staff to pull together some basic statistics and some basic information about what did happen around the county. You know, check in with all of our law enforcement agencies and find out about how many calls they had and how many they were able to respond to. Because that was one of the issues brought up. And I mean, when you're talking about, it's a little bit like animal control in an odd way about, you know, you see a dog running at point A, but by the time you can even dispatch somebody to deal with it, that dog's gone. Well, this is the same with fireworks. And we even ourselves, the county had someone trying to set off or setting off fireworks down at the animal control building. Outside of it, and so I felt that if we had staff pull together some basic safety statistics and quality of life comments, should people, you know, care to pass them on to us, the various law enforcement, that what we would have would at least be a base, maybe that as we go down to lobby or if there are changes proposed in the law, that we were able to provide some data-based information for that. Be able to just tell the residents and identify about, yes, how many calls we had, and unfortunately we're not able to respond to them. So this is what do you suggest and what is needed? So I think it would be something that county residents would be interested in and could become useful in the future. I know actually the first year, I did put the first year here, it's the first episode because they come back in December, but we also can take a look at that and add those statistics.
Sure, absolutely. So here's what the sheriff had to say when you discussed with him doing something with public safety statistics and building all this through his office.
Oh. Okay, I hadn't occurred to me that I would, if I'm just pulling statistics, to pull them from the sheriff's office to talk to him. This should have originated with the sheriff instead?
Well, for me, anytime I see something dealing with public safety, I mean, I know my first call is to the sheriff, simply because he's the chief elected official in charge of public safety issues.
Okay. We certainly can pull it off of the agenda, and I'll call the sheriff and ask him about this. I thought since we were just pulling statistics that
Well, that would be my suggestion, is that we don't have anybody from the Sheriff's Office here today. I'd like to have them weigh in before we discuss or consider anything that impacts them. Marty, I don't know what your feelings are on this.
Did not the, was it the Des Moines City Council or the West Des Moines City Council met last night to discuss this?
Right.
And it was a shocking little factoid that the Des Moines police did not issue any citations through the 4th of July weekend, and just like, and clearly there was things that fell outside the parameters. And we don't have a touch on the sale, that's state of Iowa. Use, well, in the unincorporated, the cities get to be their own policing entity. I have some curiosity, but I suspect that you might come back and find that there was a modest, if any, you know, citations issued. He's annoying. Yeah, you gotta come out in my neighborhood. I got a shooting range out by me. I can tell you what annoying really is.
I think the comment that the person who emailed to all three of us that did kind of get my attention too is when this person said that someone at the sheriff's office said call the supervisors. Now, and I didn't choose to get down into that portion of it, you know, but I think that probably did make me think, oh, okay, so we'll gather some statistics on that. But that's fine. I'll check in with the sheriff first and find out whether he
would be inclined to say go that way. I think this has a currency. You know, I am shocked with going into the new year, knowing that you get a legislative session. I would have never thought that it had done this. I did not think there was that upswell to see this come to pass. Now that it's with us, we're dealing with it in ways that I think we had no reasonable anticipation of having to do with. I think I have the intellectual curiosity to find out, or want to know what you find out, but I would say I would probably take it back as well. Two, you can have your standing police forces and see what they did through the holiday. You have, you know, clearly they've all addressed the sales portion of it as far as where it can be done, and we've done that ourselves. I have. Yeah, I would say this is, you're starting a conversation just not going to happen. We're just not going to have it today, because the thing is, I would say, go ahead, go do this.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with what both of you have said. Callie and I's house in Ames happens to back up to a Ames City Park where supposedly you can't shoot off any fireworks. And I will tell you that that's not even close to what really happened back in the park behind our house. I know calls to Ames were way, way up. And I think it's a great discussion for us to have. I just firmly believe that we need to run anything like this through them. So, Laura, we appreciate you reaching out, and we'll talk about it later.
I will do that.
Next is still Laura's, and it is discussion consideration of inviting the City of Ames to partner with Story County in commissioning a new comprehensive housing needs assessment study. Laura, it's been a few years since we've done this.
What did you find out? 1998. That's the last time that we did a comprehensive housing study, and it was a joint project between Ames and Story County. And it's been coming up, the discussion about it, lately. Of course, everyone's looking at housing, whether it's the affordable housing or the true low-income housing. Also, you've got, from an economic development standpoint, you've got companies who are finding that they can't find housing when they're hiring maybe professionals. You've got out in our smaller communities, they're looking, it came up earlier, Brenda brought it up, that they're looking at housing as economic development. That's the best way for them, and it grows the truth. Everything does that. Well, so Brenda has been a wonderful, wonderful resource. I am just almost daily amazed at how much she knows about how, what kind of information we need to pull together to really access all of the programs and to really take a good look at what we need and have community input on it. And was fortunate to locate a copy of the study. Vanessa Baker Latimer over at the city was one of the co-chairs of the 1998 study, and now Rhiannon has found her copy of it. So we have two copies, and in the meantime, we have scanned it digitally. So everybody, I can get a copy to anybody who wants to read this. It was 268 pages long, and it took them about a year to create it. The housing stock was looked at every community. The future needs were looked at. It's fascinating to go back and read what you thought 19 years ago Ames' needs would be in outlying counties as compared to what we now know reality to be. And also, you know, taking a look at some of the issues involved with transportation, how do you move people around, et cetera. So as we've been talking,
talking, as I've been talking to people, I met with Vanessa Baker-Latimer to discuss, you know, about the need for that. She's very, all her years in housing, has been very, she's very adamant, too, that she thinks this should happen. So I made calls. I located the company that originally did the study. They have a different name, but they're still around. Talked to actually a woman who remembers our study being done. I also called over to Iowa State. I called some other communities and counties that had had such studies done in the last few years. And they told me to call over to Iowa State, and I spoke with, there's now a team at Iowa State that does it. I told them what we had last time, and what we got last time is we actually paid for people to go out and physically drive by and inspect some inspections, inspect some of the housing stock. We also, there were multiple community inputs. There was a task force that oversaw it, and I believe there are 22 or 24 members on this task force. We're talking about a year project here. And I got a price somewhere between $60,000 and $80,000. I'm looking at about $70,000 to $75,000. And that doesn't mean that after the task force is formed that they may not want to add on some things. But, you know, this is like we're going to go with what we think kind of an estimate is, as there's many steps to be done. There's an RFP to put out. I consulted with Leanne to find out exactly how long an RFP would be. So I find it appropriate that the RFP manual is on the agenda later today. Okay, so this is a very long process with many people involved. Anyway, so we got to the point where Vanessa said, I think probably at least you should ask Ames if they want to participate in this rather than we pick up the entire cost.